Hello, listeners. I'm Allie, and this is Quad Pro Quo. As always, I'm joined by my three co-hosts, Tammy.
Hello.
Matt.
Hi, Angie. We love you.
And Guido.
Yeah.
We are in week two of They Met on Set Month, which is Matt's pick. But before we get to Matt's pick, do you guys have, like, a favorite rom-com? Or just, like... rom-com.
Let's man, go. You've got to prep us for these.
Well, no, I like to get you. Like, it's just like letterbox, man. Okay. Letterboxed.
So rom-com.
Let's say rom-com.
I don't know if it's a favorite, but it might be one, or it might be one that I've seen the most. I don't know. That's hard.
Okay.
I know.
I've seen How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days 1,000 times.
Yeah, that's a big, oh my God, my older brother was so, he texted me, he was like, Kate Hudson got an Oscar nomination for that fucking Neil Diamond movie. And then he wrote, she sucks. So does Neil Diamond. Ugh. He was so annoyed by it. I'm like, her proximity to Kurt Russell makes her less awful. But
is 10 Things I Hate About You a rom-com?
Absolutely a rom-com.
That's a good one.
Absolutely. Guido? I know it's not really your genre.
My favorite rom-com is Braveheart. Okay, so how, you know, in the beginning of the movie, they get together and they get married with that scarf. It's so sweet. And, you know, they have those moments together in
the hand tying ceremony.
You know, the fog-laden woods, and they frolicked a bit together. And
you see them titties.
And you see them titties. And they lay with each other, and it's beautiful. And then...
How's that funny?
Because then she gets her throat slashed.
Right.
After being
she is hilariously
assaulted.
Murdered.
Yes. Because it was
very funny.
Because these are Scottish people and British people, not Italian people.
Well, then, yeah.
So it's fucking
this offensive
funny.
To my heritage. I am very Scottish. There's this great movie, and I feel like it doesn't get mentioned a lot. It's called About Time. It's a Richard Curtis movie, and it has Domhnall Gleeson and Rachel McAdams and Bill Nye in it. Margot Robbie has a small part in it.
Mm.
And it's so good and beautiful and, like, sad and, like, hilarious. And I feel like people don't remember it very well, but it's really, really well done. I want to do it for the podcast whenever
about,
we have a...
It's About Time.
It's called About Time. Yeah, and it takes place in England. It takes place...
Oh, I've seen that.
Mostly in London. And then, yeah, it's so beautiful. And Bill Nye is so good in it. And there's just really funny parts of it. But I also love When Harry Met Sally. So even though Meg Ryan annoys the crap out of me. But I do love her in When Harry Met Sally and Billy Crystal. I always find it weird when we try to make Billy Crystal sexy.
Yes, gross.
It's kind of off-putting.
That guy threw somebody's mom from the train, so...
I thought that was Danny DeVito.
Oh, right.
Also, it's weird when they try to make him sexy.
Mom?
But also a little bit more believable, in my opinion. Matt, do you have a favorite rom-com?
No.
Dude, he just keeps pushing a baby in a stroller. He doesn't
really
fuck anyone.
You look really tired. Are you ready to take a nap or maybe a sleep?
A long slumber?
I was trying
a large nocturnal nap.
Last sleep?
I mean, rom-coms are probably close to slashers is my least favorite genre of film. I was just thinking of maybe like my favorite romance. My favorite, like, romantic movie.
Romance.
Okay.
I also love French Kiss with Meg Ryan and Kevin Kline. Really good.
I guess closest for, like, rom-com for me would... But I'm not picking it for your month next month. I'm not going to do The Wedding Singer. But, I mean, I think that's a really cute one.
I do love The Wedding Singer.
Ooh.
Her and Adam Sandler. It's so good. My favorite romantic movie... would have to be Casablanca. Yeah, I know. Basic, whatever. But it's just...
Very.
Yep.
Super basic.
Yeah.
Shut up. It's a beautiful movie.
This guy took a movie class.
Shut up. Wow.
Yes, I did take him. I took several.
All right.
But, I mean, I'm sorry. It's a love lost and you let it go sort of movie. I thought... I love...
Except when the guy ends up with the girl at the end.
They don't end up together, though.
They don't.
I know, but that's
he doesn't give
better.
A damn.
But she's practical.
No, in Casablanca, he lets her go.
Yeah, but
to quote Meg Ryan, in Sleepless in Seattle,
no.
I don't want to live in Casablanca with a guy who owns a bar.
Yeah, Rick knew better, and he's like, that's why you're getting on this plane. He's looking at you, kid.
Speaking of Humphrey Bogart.
Yes, speaking of Humphrey Bogart, yes, of course. Yes, I've had several film classes. I've watched several very old films.
You're so sophisticated.
Wow.
He's very complex.
My movie came out in 1946. It had an estimated budget of $250,000. Adjusting for inflation, that was just over $4 million today.
Okay.
With an estimated gross of, and remember, this is back in the day when you could just go into the movies, you pay a nickel, you sit there all day.
Say, yeah.
It certainly wasn't a dollar.
An estimated gross of $53,724, which is just under $450K for inflation today. It has a Rotten Tomato score of 96%. My film is The Big Sleep. It was directed again by legendary filmmaker Howard Hawks, film director known for films like Bringing Up Baby.
Love Bringing Up Baby.
His Girl Friday. Also Rio great. Bravo. Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, and is the uncredited director of The Thing from Another World, which some of us might know as the source material for John Carpenter's classic, The Thing.
Woo!
Screenplay was written by William Faulkner, famous novelist. You know him from As I Lay Dying. He adapted To Have and To Have Not. It was also adapted by Jules Furthman, also known for This, Mutiny on the Bounty, and again, To Have and To Have Not. I'm going to repeat a lot of this sort of stuff. And the third person that adapted this screenplay is Lee Brackett. She's known for This, the film Rio Bravo, another Howard Hawks classic. And she also helped write The Empire Strikes Back. And this is adapted from the novel of the same name, The Big Sleep, by Raymond Chandler. He's basically the Tom Clancy / James Patterson of the hard-boiled PI novels of the 30s and 40s. Starring Louis Jean Haidt as Joe Brody, John Ridgely as Eddie Mars, Martha Vickers as Karma Sturdwood, and of course my couple for this theme, film legends Lauren Bacall. You might know her from To Have and To Have Not, the film Key Largo. She was also in The Murder on the Orient Express, the 1978 version. She was also in Misery. She is the character Vivian Rutledge in this film, and her beau, Humphrey Bogart, known for Casablanca, The Maltese Falcon. Honestly, I could name all of his movies. Quite possibly, he is my favorite actor in the history of film.
Really?
He does love Bogey.
It really doesn't get any but
Sabrina.
Sabrina, yes. It really does not get... That could be my rom-com.
Sabrina is absolutely a rom-com. The original
Sabrina with Bogey and...
Audrey Hepburn,
yep. And he is in this film. He stars as private investigator Philip Marlowe. Just a little backstory on the couple. They met on To Have and Have Not, which is the classic film. This is Lauren Bacall's breakout film. I mean, if you've ever seen, like, anything about her, it starts with this, and you see the clip of her going, "You know how to whistle, don't you? Mm-hmm. You just put your lips together and..."
It had to be wet, though.
Wait, the movie that they met on was her film debut? That's
yes, cool. To Have and To Have Not. And that movie came out in
1994.
1994?
They're time travelers?
Yes, whoa. Yes, I'm
I
sorry.
Knew it.
Wow.
That movie came out, I blame the cocktail that I prepared for this. It was in 1944. There was a bit of scandal to this couple, a scandal that could carry over to today, but the real reason why it was a scandal back then was this. Lauren Bacall was only 19 when they met, and Bogey was 45.
There we go.
Sure.
Okay.
I mean, that's a problem now, but the real scandal back then was he was still married to his third wife, Maya Moffat.
What's she look like?
When they met. He traded up. That's apparently a thing that Bogey did was he
you upgraded. Can track his marriages and then the start of the next marriage because they're all the same year. So it'll be like 1901 to 1908, 1908 to 1912. He always cheated on one wife with the next wife.
Mm.
That's what Bogey did.
Nobody learned.
The only reason he didn't cheat on Lauren Bacall, well, he might have, is because he died.
So this was his last wife?
Lauren Bacall was his last wife.
Yeah. This was his last wife.
They were married till he died.
How old was he when he died?
Well, another fact was they had an affair, you know, during To Have and Have Not and into the filming of this. His marital problems escalated during filming, and he drank a lot on set, which was making it really difficult to do the whole thing, and he was unable to work. 3 months after this film was completed, They got married in 1945. But you know what? Despite their age difference and him being married, they could not resist their chemistry both on screen and off. They were married on May 21st, 1945, and worked together for four more films. Or, no, they did five films together, including this, To Have and To Have Not, Dark Passage, Key Largo. Key Largo's amazing. Two Guys from Milwaukee. They had two children together. Mm-hmm. They were together until Bogart's passing in 1957, okay, when he died from esophageal cancer, leaving Bacall a widow at 32.
If you can't tell from all of the smoking in this
and
movie.
And the drinking.
Oh, my God. And then she married Jason Robards.
Well, before that, she was briefly linked. She was in a brief relationship with Frank Sinatra.
Who wasn't?
They were.
I said.
Well, they were secretly engaged, but then it was leaked to the press. And he blamed her for that.
Shocking. Frank Sinatra's terrible to women. Ooh.
And then, only the back of his hand.
And then they broke up.
And she married Jason Robards.
And then she married another Hollywood tough, James Robards, which also ended in divorce.
Yeah, because he's a beater, too.
He wore the shirt and everything.
He knows how to pick them.
In 1996, she had a very extensive interview, and she was quoted, "I had one great marriage. I have three great children and four grandchildren. I'm still alive. I can still function. I can still work. I spent my childhood in New York riding on subways and buses. And you know what you learn if you're a New Yorker? The world doesn't know you a damn thing."
Wow.
It's true.
She was old when she died.
She died in the
89.
She died in the Dakota, which is where they filmed Rosemary's Baby.
She died in 2014, and she died in famous quad pro quo setting.
Holy shit.
The Dakota in 2014.
Where John Lennon was shot. Yeah.
Bogey and Bacall, their romance was immortalized in the song Key Largo by Bertie Higgins with the chorus, "We had it all, just like Bogey and Bacall."
We went to Key Largo. When we were in the Keys.
Yes,
we went to this bar where supposedly they filmed the movie.
Yeah, they filmed it right. Yeah.
Right by this.
They had this terrible cardboard cutout of Bogey in there. I think Vincent could have, or Amelia could have drawn a better picture of Humphrey Bogart.
It was awful.
It was just like.
It did look like a very old bar that they would have filmed a movie like that in. I will say that. And it was right on the water. It was very pretty. But it was a shit can. Yeah.
We're going around the room. I don't know how many of our parents had Turner Classic Movies or anything like that growing up. Had you seen this movie before? What were your thoughts about my pick? I will start with Guido.
Well, what brought me to this movie, I actually enjoyed the prequel, The Small Awake.
Oh.
That was about Marlo was a beat cop working small crimes at night, and he needed to stay awake because of the dark city. So that was that one.
Wow.
Dark city,
was
huh?
Was Jamie Foxx in that?
Was the music by Bad Bunny?
No, I've only seen Casablanca, which is the only thing I've seen with him in it.
Okay, so Tammy?
I had not. I was looking forward to watching it because Humphrey Bogart is such a timeless actor.
Allie?
I actually had never seen it. I've watched a few Bogey movies. Sabrina's one of my favorite movies, but I had never seen this one. So I was excited to watch it because I like a good old noir.
Yeah, I thought we saw it together at the Colonial, but then you corrected me.
It was The Maltese Falcon.
The Maltese Falcon, which is honestly a very similar film.
I like this one better, I think.
It reads really salacious.
If you read
the synopsis of the movie, it is, we've got a dark, gritty crime where there's murder and pornography. And there's just sluts and they're just fucking killing each other. And I'm like, sign me the fuck up.
My cocktail is directly from the film. So this is a very old cocktail.
Right from the beginning, too, dude.
Right from the beginning of this film.
Everybody's drinking in this movie.
I believe I went, when they said it on the movie.
This is literally just a mix of brandy and champagne.
It doesn't have a name.
It
smells old.
It's called old as fuck. That's what it's called.
It's just what General Sternwood would drink.
He's an alcoholic.
Oh, I mean, it's not.
Congratulations, you've made boozy champagne.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not really like any, like.
I could taste the heat.
Yeah.
This oh, is yeah, some, there's a little bit of bite at the end.
Fucking bubbly turpentine right there.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. It looks, it's a looks loaded like, up champagne.
It looks like sparkling like apple juice. But I feel like you could put like a rim around the top of this, like a gummy-ish sugar, like a lemony sugar rim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then
it would be like a nice little
What about a Pop Rocks rim?
Ooh, no, your stomach will explode.
That's
an urban legend.
Soda.
It's an urban legend.
No, that's
she
not
doesn't
urban
know
legend.
What that means.
You gotta be quicker
Allie.
Than that.
That's a Geico commercial.
It's a Geico commercial.
The film starts with our titular character, Philip Marlowe, played by Humphrey Bogart. We see Humphrey Bogart as a private detective just brought up into this being summoned to this mansion.
I love this house.
Of this man named General Sternwood. He walks in and who walks down but somebody, some leggy broad.
With a gams?
With her gams and her tiggle bitties. The way this woman looked, we would have thought she was the leading lady.
As soon as those legs hit those stairs, I was like, oh my God. A, first of all, polka dot coochie cutters. Like, those shorts were so short.
Looking
this is
good.
1946. Those shorts were so short. She's wearing polka dot shorts and the legs.
Hot.
Oh my God. I was like, is that Lauren McCall? And I was like, that's not Lauren McCall. Who is this little trampy?
This is the slutty younger sister.
How young is this girl supposed to be exactly?
Like, I don't
16?
No.
She's at least like probably
18?
17 or 18.
Okay.
Of age.
At least of age.
Well, back then, that, of age is different.
Yeah. And wait, here's, this the pornography girl?
The one who was like.
Okay. That, yep.
To quote your Mimi, it was the times.
It was the times.
Showing all of her ankles.
But
All of her ankle.
Both ankles out.
You could see her uterus in those shorts.
I love
Jesus.
How they appreciated a voluptuous woman.
Yes,
day.
That's a real woman.
She is. Lauren Bacall is thin as shit in this movie. Like, she can grab her waist and her fingers touch. Like, that's how tiny her waist is. But I will say the other ladies in this movie, of all of which are gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Every Luke woman Kelsey. In this movie is gorgeous. Yeah. Like, statuesque and, like, voluptuous.
We find out that this is Carmen Sternwood, the younger of the two daughters, mm-hmm. who is the daughter of General Sternwood, who is the person that is hiring Philip Marlowe. He's the one that's like, yeah, I like to, or would you like a glass of brandy? And he's like, yeah, I like my brandy with champagne. Champagne cold enough for Valley Forge with 3 nips of brandy to warm you up.
When they're sitting in the hothouse?
This is so...
Yeah, they're sitting... General Sternwood is very, very old, apparently. He's at the end of his years.
In a wheelchair.
His bones are tired.
He's paralyzed. From the waist down.
He's like Mrs. Doubtfire. He's like, I can't smoke, but I like to sit in the room and enjoy watching you smoke it.
This is reminding me now of when we were down in Key West. Like, that was kind of Ernest Hemingway at the tail end of his life.
He couldn't drink or smoke.
He couldn't drink or smoke anymore, so he basically paid this guy named Arturo Fuente to sit there and smoke cigars with him and listen to Hemingway talk about cigars. Yes, Fuente.
That Arturo Fuente?
Yes. He got his start as Hemingway's cigar boy.
Get the fuck out of here. Really?
Oh, does he make cigars or something like that?
He makes his... they're called Arturo Fuente.
They are some of the best
That's
cigars.
Really cool, actually.
Some of his best ones are called Hemingway's, where they're rolled up and they're made to look like little pens,
kind of.
So, Philip Marlowe is brought in to... He's hired by General Sternwood because his younger daughter, you know, the slutty one that we saw, is being blackmailed by some guy named Arthur Geiger. And as Marlowe leaves the house, he's now conscripted by the older daughter...
Vivian
Rutledge, Mrs. Rutledge, who is played by Lauren Bacall.
It's how she wears a blouse that does it.
Stunning. And pants. I love...
And a robe.
A woman in pants. Especially a woman in these old movies in pants.
Back in that time, I was racy.
And she was a gambler.
That's something else too I love. I love how fast people speak in movies, in these old movies. And it's because it's intentional, because film is so expensive that like you had to speak that fast to get the movie to be under a certain amount of time and stuff like that.
And yet this movie's almost 2 hours long.
But it makes it. But when he's talking to her, when he's talking to the dad in the solarium or whatever the fuck they are, the pace at which they're ping-ponging back and forth, it's so exciting. It's so exciting.
They're almost speaking right as the other person stops.
I love it.
They're almost stepping on each other.
It's why I love Double Indemnity so much, because it almost creates this flirtation.
Just wait until we figure out.
It's not a flirtation, but
it just reminds me of
Joe Buck.
Or not Joe Buck, Uncle Buck.
What?
Why?
Where they're at the table and he's asking those rapid-fire questions.
Wow. Him and
fuck Joe Buck. I was talking about Uncle Buck.
Do you live alone? No. I'm a kid. Why?
How many questions do you have? I'm a kid. That's my
37.
Job. Yep.
That's my kid. That's my job.
Thank you for reminding me of that. We got to pick a theme where I can figure out how I can get Yell to watch Double Indemnity.
Oh my God. Fuck. I love it so much. But there's this like this flirtation because they have to speak so fast. And so there's no space or like awkward pauses.
And it's like they have to have chemistry.
And they have, they're forced to. Yes. And I love it. And it's something, look, I'm so excited to see Wuthering Heights, but like long glances and big, long, no dialogue. I'm like, can we do something here?
Speaking of, like, with this whole time when Bogey and Bacall are seeing each other at the same time, you notice that they're literally the same height?
Yeah, because he's standing on a box of apples.
Surprisingly enough, he is not.
He's not.
Humphrey Bogart is 5'8".
That's how tall I am.
She said in the movie she commented on his height. Or a woman commented on how
short
he
little,
was.
The little sister did.
I'm a grower, not a shower, see?
Well,
The little sister was like, not very tall. He's like, oh, well, I'm trying, you know, with his hat. Bacall says the same thing. He's like, maybe next time I'll walk in here wearing stilts and a white shirt and tie.
Well, I feel like most of the women are very tall in this movie.
Another fun fact I was going to say, like I said, Humphrey Bogart is 5'8", and Lauren Bacall is 5'8½" in this film. So Mrs. Rutledge, Lauren Bacall, thinks that the dad hired Marlo to find their missing former fixer/PI, Sean Reagan, who disappeared a month earlier. Fun fact about that whole scene about introducing the characters, Raymond Chandler, the author of the book, claimed that Martha Vickers, who played the younger sister Carmen, gave such an intense performance that she completely overshadowed Lauren Bacall.
Yeah.
Shoot it, girl.
Because of that, a lot of her stuff was cut because they didn't want her to overshadow Lauren Bacall.
She does kind of disappear in this movie.
She's an over-actor, and that's what you do.
After her main scene, you hardly see her.
You hardly see her. She comes back. She's a drunkie, like high on the pills.
You're cute.
Everything is you're cute. Let me bite on my finger.
I don't remember.
And then she comes back towards the end, and you're like, oh, you.
So like,
see those legs.
Marlo is investigating this whole blackmail scheme by this guy named Geiger. He goes to Geiger's shop. He totally pulls a fast one on the lady that's working at the bookstore.
The one bookstore.
The one at Geiger's
the
bookstore.
The fancy one.
And then
she's gorgeous.
He gets kicked out, kind of. He gets ran out, and he goes to the bookstore across the street where there's this other girl who runs this other bookstore. He does the same spiel to her, and she's like, that's not a thing. No, obviously that person.
Why don't we have a drink?
And then she's like, you're going to go wait in your car, but there's too much rain going on. He's like, I got a bottle of rye in my pocket. What do you say we sit here and drink it?
This is my favorite part of the movie somehow.
This woman is stunning.
She could get
all the women in this movie are stunning. This woman, when she comes out, she lets her hair down. I'm like,
speaking of that woman, how old do you think she was when this filming happened?
Why don't you say how old Humphrey Bogart is supposed to be in this movie?
If I'm gonna feel fucking creep, say it.
He's supposed to be 38.
He's supposed to be 37. When you did the Moonstruck and you made a big deal about how Cher was supposed to be 37 in Moonstruck, and we're supposed to believe that Humphrey Bogart is 37 in this movie, that man has never been 37. He came out of the womb 45 years old.
Holy shit, dude.
That man has never been a young man, ever.
But this is...
You were born an old man,
you were,
bitch.
Yes.
But this is the beauty of black and white film.
No, it doesn't help him. I'm sorry, how old was this woman supposed to be?
Well, no, it's not how old this woman was supposed to be. It's how old she was when they filmed
it. How old was she?
I will take guesses. We'll do Price is Right.
Are we going
older or younger?
I'm assuming that she's older because of the way you're saying it.
I think the lady was 29.
I feel like she looks like she's like 22.
29.
Yeah, I was going to say 21.
Age 29 from Guido. Age
21.
21 from Tammy.
I was going to say like 22.
22. Yeah. You all don't get to go to Showcase Showdown by Price is Right. She was fucking 19 when she filmed this shit.
Good. I'm surprised Bogey didn't go for her and leave Lauren Bacall.
So Lauren and her were about the same age.
No, Lauren Bacall is 22 in this movie. You're 21 around there.
Yeah, Lauren Bacall.
When they met, she was 19.
Okay. Apparently, Howard Hawks, the director, was so struck by her mature sexuality that he decided to make the scene steamier.
This is getting gross.
It is kind of steamy. Like, she says, like, why don't you stay here and I'll close these blinds.
Let me take my glasses off that don't have the ear part.
Can I kiss your dick with my mouth?
Yeah.
He said, do you need these? And she said, not necessarily.
And then she takes them off, whips her hair out. They drink that ride.
Yeah,
together.
He does give her a, don't you want to go take care of that? And she's like, oh, right. I'm ugly right now. Let me get rid of my glasses.
Yes, I said that when she came back and her glasses were off. I was like, oh, she's pretty now. Thank goodness.
She shakes her hair and she's like, is that better? And he goes, she's be all better if you weren't wearing any clothes.
Yeah, it's a she's all that moment.
Presumably, we think they drink and they fuck in the clothes bookstore.
I really didn't think they fucked. I just think they drank and like had fun.
Maybe third base.
He calls her pal.
That's what you do to somebody you finger.
Yeah, I think she's kind of a lesbian, to be honest with you.
He pats her on the ass and says, way to go, pal.
Yeah,
you know, they totally fondled each other's
that
bits.
That soup can of an ass.
You don't call Absolute somebody that you screwed pal.
Like a Carla Gugino.
Yeah, I think they're more just kind of like having...
What are you talking about? I pat you and I go, way to go, pal. Good job.
You've never done that.
Matt, you hold your hand out and somehow she backs into it.
It works.
I do it with my boob, too. I get up from the couch and like I walk by and he has his hand out and I just have to put my boob in his hand.
And it's like
paying the toll.
Some type of magnetism.
You gotta pay the troll toll.
The tit toll.
Tit toll.
So basically, Marlo was hiding in the other shop to wait for Geiger to come out of his shop. He sees him leave. He follows him up to his house. He hears a gunshot and a scream and runs into the house. And who's there but drugged up sister Carmen? You're cute.
You're cute. Yeah.
She said that a lot.
And I will say this. In these movies, they said you're high, and I think high back then was you're drunk.
She might have been hopped up on opium. We don't know.
No, they say it again.
No, they're doing ketamine.
I don't think they said drunk back then. I think they said you're high, and high meant you were drunk.
According to my notes, it says drugged, so... And meanwhile, she's sitting in this chair, and Marlo's in there. She's sitting in this chair. He sees her sitting there, and then he also sees this, like, hidden camera.
This was a really hidden camera that he just knew it was a camera.
It was fucking open when he walked in.
No, it wasn't that open.
This house was, opened it up.
It was closed over, but it was still open.
This house was like a museum, too. Yeah. It was, like, antiquities, and, like, Indiana Jones' dad lived there. Like,
never been in your professor's house before?
Was it, like, the Hollywood Hills?
It was a great house. Yeah, I loved it.
It was beautiful.
None of these houses exist. Yeah, none of these houses exist anymore.
No, they do. Just buy them and then tear them down and build disgusting boxes.
Hollywood burnt down. Oh. The Palisades are no more.
Oh,
yeah, the riots. Remember, this guy knows.
No, not the riots. The literal fucking fire 2 years ago. Come on.
Marlo is like, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take you, drunk bitch. I'm going to take you back to your house. And I'm going to tell your butler and I'm going to tell your older sister that you never left the house today.
What a weird fucking family, man.
I thought it was the butler the whole time.
She was never here, you know? She never left. You know what?
It's
she was
Tim Curry.
She was sick.
No, he's just a good butler.
She was sick the whole time. You know what I'm saying? Shane? Yeah, Shane.
You're making him sound like someone else.
I'm sorry.
I agree, but
you're making him sound like the little man. You're making him sound like James...
Edward G. Robinson.
Edward G. Robinson, yeah, yeah.
As much as, yeah, you're right. As much as I love Bogey.
Bogey doesn't really sound like that.
But he plays such a good guy in this movie. You're right. He does the right thing every time.
You're right. I can't do a good Bogey. I'm better at doing Vive la fucking France, man! Jesus. A motherfucking retard, huh? Not only are we keeping Carmen at home, we then find out, because, you know, Marlo is a private investigator, but he also has a good standing with the law. Part of the reason why he was brought to this family is because he is a private investigator that works for the district attorney's office, and the district attorney's office was like, hey, we need you to come and look at this fucking car that just ran off the pier. Apparently it's owned by the Sternwood family too.
Yeah, he's a former police officer, remember?
We find out that Sternwood's former driver, Owen Taylor, has been found dead in a limousine driven off the Lido Pier. How far away is that from where your house was back in the day?
25 about 35 minutes, but if there's traffic, an hour and a half.
Is it far from the pier that Michael Douglas was on in that the Falling Down movie?
Okay, so that was on Venice Beach, I thought.
So the Lido Pier is where Guido's VCR was stolen to.
No,
the TV was off the Michael Douglas Pier. The Lido Pier, the Lido Pier is where his VCR was.
Okay.
I lived in Culver City, and I'll never forget the riots, okay? I am a victim, and I feel like you're making light of my victimhood, and that is not
true. No, because I'm pretty sure we brought this up in front of your dad, and your dad was like, what are you talking
about?
That
also didn't happen. You just made that up.
No, I'm pretty sure we asked your dad about it, and he was like, what? No, we were nowhere near that.
The worst thing that happened to you was
someone stole avocados from your tree in the backyard.
Your dad was like, what?
He definitely pointed a gun at that guy stealing avocados.
Your dad said the worst thing that happened was a troop of Beverly Hills scouts
trying to sell cookies
to his house.
Gather around you.
And he was like, oh, don't you go to sing? And they said no. And he said, well, then get out of here. Fuck you.
He didn't say that.
Did they have red feathers?
Listen. Did he say it like that? Get out of here.
He was like, get out of here.
Look.
I lost my hand. I don't have cookies.
You motherfuckers. He's coming over on Sunday, and you can ask him about the goddamn riots.
It's a very convoluted plot where in and out. We have a great scene about where Bogey and Bacall prank call the police station. That was hilarious.
That was funny.
Again, with the fast talking, I love it so much.
Yeah, is your refrigerator running?
Is this your daughter? Oh, no, let me put my dad on the phone.
You better go catch it.
Did you talk to my wife?
Carmen's being blackmailed for salacious photos.
When you say salacious, you mean like nudie? Like nudies?
Yeah.
Like nudie photos?
Yeah. Pornography?
There's just a lot of ins and outs and then all this crazy stuff that's happening. Even I get a little lost, and I read the fucking book.
The driver was messing with Geiger.
He wanted to marry the daughter.
Yeah.
But the younger daughter, I mean.
Carmen.
And they were like, no, can't have that. Can't have the help.
Very Downton Abbey.
Can't have the help swapping up with everything. And then meanwhile, also in the whole blackmailing thing, somehow the former PI, the former fixer of the family, got mixed up with the wife of the local mob boss,
right.
Eddie Mars. She ran off with him, but also he died. He got shot.
Forgive me if I'm jumping ahead, but the car that they found in the water.
That's the car with the chauffeur that wanted
to marry the little sister.
That whole scene in the apartment, I don't know who that guy was. He was the other PI. So it was the bookstore woman, the first bookstore woman. And then that guy shows up and...
The first bookstore woman has evidence of the former PI running off with the big mob guy's wife, who is also somehow entangled with Lauren Bacall.
There are a lot of... Yeah, it's a lot in this.
It's very convoluted.
Yes.
It gets to a point where it's like... They're like, wait, who died in this movie? And it got so...
I forgot.
No, yeah.
I forgot what we were trying to figure out at some point. We saw the driver shooting... Like, after they found the car. That's why I was like, really? He died in the car?
I forgot.
Because I thought he shot up a stairwell.
The craziest thing is it gets so convoluted at the point that, like, with this screenplay, William Faulkner, Jules, what's his name, and the lady that wrote Empire Strikes Back, they all, like, basically telegrammed Raymond Chandler and was like, hey, we're trying to figure out who is the end-all murderer in this movie. And he said, it's clearly in the book. You guys didn't read the fucking book. What's wrong with you?
It's Lauren McCall, right?
And then he read the book and he was like, oh, fuck. I just realized I didn't really clearly say it.
But it's Lauren McCall, right?
No.
It's not?
It's not. Is somehow it the sister? It's not. Again, it's...
So we never know who the killer is?
We never really find out.
I always thought it was Lauren McCall.
Would you describe that as a plot hole?
Oh, it's such a plot.
I would just describe it as a not being able to end the movie.
Oh, so we're just going to go home and fuck each other. Just forget about who killed who.
According to Raymond Chandler in his book, Carmen was a nymphomaniac, the younger sister, who shot Sean Reagan and dumped his body down an oil well. Geiger, the book guy, ran a porn business using his bookstore as a cover. Neither of these two topics were discussed or addressed due to the Hollywood censors of the time.
Oh.
And in a major departure from the novel, Howard Hawks decided not to have Lauren Bacall turn out to be an accomplice to the murders.
He changed the script at the end?
I thought that she killed the guy to get the pictures back to protect her sister. That's what I thought.
Yeah. Well, she...
I feel like that makes sense, Raymond Chandler.
Ultimately, at the end of the novel, she's just doing what she can to protect... Or at the end of the movie, she's doing what she can to protect her sister. And then we get to the whole thing at the end where Marlo convinces Vivian that her sister needs psychiatric care after the sparks that flew between them.
She needs a sanatorium.
It's clear that those two need to fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Bogey and Bacall.
She's got ghosts in her blood, dude.
Vivian confesses her own problems. You know, Mrs. Rutledge convinces her own problems, but there's nothing that Bogey can't fix.
Just bang it out.
Lauren McCall. She looks like an alien. Her eyes are so...
She looks stunning.
Is it her, like, underbite that does...
I was going to say she's like the Anya Taylor-Joy. Like, she's like the wide set eyes and the thinness and just... I just think that it gets a little convoluted, and it's just also, I feel like you lose the track for a while. And I kind of forgot what we were even investigating at some point.
It gets a little messy at the end.
A little.
Basically, all in the end is that little sister is a whore. Well, not little sister is a whore.
Strumpet.
But little sister likes to go around and likes to show her shit off. Somebody took pictures of it. They're trying to get it out of there. And then also there are more people that knew about little sister being a little bit of a whore. And then it also adds big sister being a gambler who runs
a divorcee.
And it runs afoul.
Almost as bad as being a whore.
It runs afoul of the big...
We've come such a long way.
Of the local gambling boss.
Did you see in that scene towards the end after she sings that ring she's wearing?
I didn't notice it.
That thing, you could see where the Titanic hit it. Like, it was the biggest fucking rock I have ever seen. I don't know what color that ring was. It was definitely a color. It wasn't a diamond. And it's in black and white, so you can't tell. But I'm like, it looks like it would be like a sapphire or an emerald.
It was diamond.
Like the biggest fucking ring I've ever seen. It was gorgeous looking.
It's all about clarity.
Everything she wore.
Singing to everybody.
Everything everyone wore in this movie. People don't dress like that anymore.
You know why people don't dress like that anymore? The beginning of the movie where that guy sweat in that, what do you call that room?
In the botanical garden.
The sun room. He's wearing wool. Yeah,
he's wearing like a dressing gown. He's dressed like Hugh Hefner, basically.
But also, Bogey is just wearing a suit and he goes into a terrarium, basically.
That's what it is.
Oh, he's very. When
it's
he leaves,
hot as
you
fuck.
Can see it. When he goes up to talk to her in the room,
he's drenched.
He's drenched.
Yeah, I will say,
it's humidified.
In that
there.
Scene in the club, she's wearing something, and you can, even though it's black and white, you can tell it's like shiny. Uh-huh. It's like gold lamé, silver.
Yes.
I will,
and I can just tell
or like
how
black with gold sheen.
I will say like, this.
Yeah,
I
love that. She looks amazing.
That outfit.
I thought the same thing, too.
That outfit that Lauren Bacall was wearing during their little, like, that when she shows up at Marlowe's office, and then they have that fun that fun phone call with the police.
Yes.
I saw Taylor Swift wear that.
Did you?
on The Tonight Show.
Yeah, talk to my wife. I don't want to talk to your wife.
The movie is done. Marlo and Mrs. Rutledge, they love each other. All the sister is now saved. She's going to become a nun or something. I don't know.
Gotta go to rehab.
She said, no, no, no.
She's going to get her shit fixed. We hear the classic Hollywood music. You know,
that's the classic Hollywood music?
Well, no, that's how you...
That was Doug. That's the classic Hollywood music.
Yeah, there you go.
Bogey and McCall kiss.
Well, you get what I mean. The classic Hollywood, like the
I love this place.
The cinematic music ends. Yes. No top spins or anything like that. We know this is a clear ending.
Nice and clean, dude.
It's a
messy ass movie. But
nice and clean. No, the movie ends.
But you know what? Honestly, though, I recommend it to everyone. I think
you told us to watch it
and even read the books. Raymond Chandler is an amazing novelist. Like you just don't get that shit anymore. Let's go around the room. Pass, fail, Allie.
Pass. I loved it.
Yes, loved Humphrey Bogart just fucking everything.
No, I loved. First of all, I loved the women in this movie. All of them were gorgeous. I loved the costuming, even though it's in black and white. I can see it in my mind. And like I said, when that sister in that first scene walked down those stairs with those legs, I gasped. The women are gorgeous. Humphrey Bogart is lovely. But it's really, I think, the women in this movie that are so gorgeous and stunning. And I think it is a little bit confusing. I still don't really know who killed anybody in this movie or why we were investigating anything.
Apparently the guy that wrote the book
didn't know either. And I now understand why Lauren Bacall was into Bogey. I don't know if when I was 19, I would have wanted to.
I'd fuck Bogey when I was 19.
Marry Humphrey Bogart. But I love it. Pass. Love it.
Tammy.
I got lost in the story. Towards the
middle.
we all did.
Like, I was like, man, this is going to have some ending. If I would have just reviewed the story, I probably wouldn't have passed it because it was so confusing. But the movie was, I enjoyed the actors. I enjoyed the old Hollywood feel. I loved the women also. I loved the costumes. I loved the characters themselves. Just the old Hollywood, I love that. Yeah. So I did appreciate it for what it was, so I pass it.
All right, and then there was one.
Look, I liked it. You can see how much farther they went with much less. And, you know, the audience can appreciate much more from much less,
it's
right?
It's so true.
And it shows you the stark contrast between what we had then and what we have now. It's like people are so unwilling to believe and get lost in a story or just let themselves, you know, be taken away.
But what you're saying is so true. Like, we don't appreciate that simplicity anymore, really.
It's like, just let yourself be taken by a story.
Yeah.
You don't need to be, not every goddamn aspect of your urge to do anything needs to be sated. Like, just, you've got time, you're sitting down to watch a movie, you're sitting down to watch and be involved in a story. Just fucking let it happen, man. Do we need an explosion in the first 10 minutes? Yeah. Part of me agrees sometimes, but not most of the time.
No, most of the time you...
What? You're here for story... It's story time, motherfucker.
But here's
like,
the thing,
come on.
To be honest, when we started watching it, like, I was mildly on my phone a little bit, and then... I don't know if it's like outs me as like a kind of a lesbi, but like, as soon as those legs came down the stairs and those short shorts, I literally went, what? Like that. Like,
instant attention.
I mean, instant attention. Like, it was just like, wow, you know? Like, just get lost in it, man.
Give yourself the opportunity to watch a fucking movie again.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I give it a pass. It's a good movie.
Tammy, quid pro quo.
Okay. So I am the only member of Quad Pro Quo that chose a romance movie.
Gay.
So my movie came out in 2008. It was written and directed by Woody Allen. I know.
It's problematic.
I know.
That's a choice.
We're going to sail past it in the intro. It's all good.
We're not going to talk about the artist. We're going to talk about the art. It stars Rebecca Hall, Scarlett Johansson.
I'm listening.
Javier Bardem.
I'm listening.
Does he have the bowl cut?
Penelope Cruz.
Listening Vanilla still. Sky Penelope
Cruz. Seabiscuit.
Patricia Clarkson.
Yes, she's so good in it.
I know. It's Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
Where can people watch it?
You can watch it for free on Roku Channel, Tubi,
okay.
Fossum, Plex, and Pluto TV.
Well, Vicky Cristina Barcelona for week 3 of They Met on Set. We are at Quad Pro Quo Pod across Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. You can suggest a theme month. I think we need a theme for May.
Angie,
so I got it.
Think about it.
Superfan Angie, you get to pick May. Do whatever you want, girl.
Oh my God. Mayday.
I don't know, Angie. Pick something good. Okay. So you can suggest a theme month, Angie, on our Facebook, on our social media, or our website. And please rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. And until next week, thank you for listening. Bye.
Bye.